You're listening to a podcast from 702.
This hour, something a little different, and I hope that you will stay with us and enjoy and learn about the history of Pride, both here in South Africa and also internationally, a very important year for the queer community. Obviously, the 50th anniversary of Stonewall is something that has been massive for LGBTI activism, queer communities around the globe. And as I said at the beginning of our show today, we've got our own context in South Africa, and we've got our own class, political, racial, and other fault lines that also inform the history of Pride and histories of Pride and contestation around this very important political event, going back all the way to the 90s. But for me, the most important job with the three excellent guests I'm about to introduce to you is that if you don't get why Pride matters, what its historical roots are, who the men, women, and queer persons are that have been forgotten, rendered invisible in the South African history of Pride, then this is an opportunity for you to learn. And you will be able to hopefully sound a little bit smarter come noon today after an hour of listening to, firstly, Kevil Harry, who is Executive Director at the Gala Queer Archive. Gala really does amazing work, quite apart from the subject of the history and the ways in which queer lives are impacted upon. Also, just from the point of view of research and academia and historiography, Gala has been doing really, really, really amazing stuff and continues to be an important site. Kevil, it's wonderful seeing you. Thank you so much for coming into studio.
Thank you, and it's really wonderful to be on your show, Eusebius.
It's only a pleasure. It's all ours. Jabu Pereira is director at Iranti.org, formed in 2012, and they help local and regional lesbian, trans, intersex, and gender non-conforming movements in South Africa, but also across the entire continent to use media, very importantly, as a platform for mobilizing and shifting public dialogue. I hope that's a decent summary, Jabu. Thank you so much for you being here as well.
And thanks for having me. It's really great to be here.
And then we've got on the phone with us for at least the first part of the conversation, also Sharon Cooper, a very important voice, previously chair of Pride in 1997, when the National Coalition for Gay and Lesbian Equality were determined, and rightly so, to bring the event back to the people. Of course, now manager of Afropunk. Sharon, good morning, and thanks for being part of the conversation.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on your show.
Okay, well, let's start with a broad question. Then we get into the historically specific stuff after that. How did Pride start, and why does Pride still matter?
Well, I think in the South African context, it's really important to place Pride within the historical context. So the first Pride was in 1990, okay, at a time in South Africa where the sodomy laws still existed. So there was still the criminalization of homosexual sex was still on our books. And in that context, what we see Pride as, it was very critical that the liberation of gay and lesbian people was critical to the broader kind of liberation struggles that were happening at the time. And so to place the Pride March within that context, I think, is particularly important, in that I think historically, and also that was quite groundbreaking at the time, it was the first time that the discussion had really taken place within a broader liberation struggle.
There was a delicious picture and audio with it that you guys have shared from the archives that feature Edwin Cameron, awesome Beverly Ditsy. Not that you are not awesome, Edwin, if you are listening. And of course, Simon Corley. Describe that for us before I play the clip for the public. You know exactly which bit I'm talking about.
Yeah, so I think that first clip was taken at the first Pride, and there was a group of people who insisted that this was important. You'll see also from that clip that there were certain people who marched with paper bags on their heads for the fear of being recognized,
oh, wow,
or outed. And so I think in noticing that, and the key individuals that were part of that, there were some individuals who said it's time for us to stand up and to be visible. And the importance of visibility in creating a Pride. And then secondly, in terms of speaking of those who couldn't speak at the time. And the message was quite clear that we weren't going to go anywhere, and that our liberation was critical to the broader liberation struggles that were critical at that time in South Africa.
And thank you for releasing this stuff. This is exactly why archives matter in our lives. I want to play this clip immediately. directly after that, Sharon. I'm going to come to you. I want you to close your eyes, listen to this clip, and tell me what comes up for you as we are casting, in part, our eye on the history of Pride. Play the clip for me, Abel.
This meeting and this march today have a message. We have a message to all the lawmakers of South Africa, a message to all the constitution makers of South Africa. That message is the criminal law is for criminals. Gays and lesbians are not criminals.
Today, the world is going to know that we here in South Africa have been oppressed for too long. We can't stand it anymore. Why do we have to fight for the right to love who we want to love? This is about time, and today we're making history.
To my comrades in the struggle who ask me why I waste time fighting for Morpheus. And this is what I say to white gay men or women who ask me why I spend so much time talking about apartheid when I should be fighting for gay rights. I am black and I'm gay. I cannot separate the two parts of me into secondary or primary struggle. They will be all one struggle.
I get goosebumps listening to that. Sharon, that is an incredible clip, isn't it? Edwin, many people who love Judge Cameron, they probably would be a little bit amused by the younger Edwin's voice there. Bev Ditsy, filmmaker, activist, Dr. Ditsy, and of course Simon Cawley, we're going to speak about in all the full glory of this man's work as well. But what comes up for you, Sharon, as you listen to that?
So, I was co-chair of Pride in 99, I think, and 99 and 2000, when it's old, it gets fuzzy. And just to clarify, before I reflect on it, I have the privilege of doing business development and partnerships for Afropunk. It's a black consciousness movement, and I'm without melanin, so I certainly don't lead it or manage it. I'm just lucky enough to play a role. So, stepping back, I was lucky enough to know Simon Cawley, and in the year that we took Pride and made it relevant to the broader population and black people and lesbians in particular, we stopped in town and we renamed a corner after Simon and Cawley. So, and that's in fact when we launched the Treatment Action Campaign and had a moment of silence. So very amazing. And 2 weeks ago, I had the privilege of listening to Edwin Cameron on Constitution Hill for 20 minutes, talking to young kids in a project called Afro Curation, which encourages young people to write on Wikipedia in their own languages, so to capture history and her story across the country in different native languages. So, I mean, it comes up to me, but it's, you know, my life has been a full circle. That was some maybe 20 years ago. And I'm fortunate enough to work with all the same activists now, but in a broader human rights framework. So whereas we were mandated to create one platform for all lesbian and gay people to celebrate one day in their diversity, because we're a very diverse community. The only thing that we have in common is that we are in love with or have a relationship with people of the same sex.
Absolutely. Sharon, I want to ask you this question on the historical part. Speaking of Edwin, one of the things that Edwin articulates very well is the importance to not take for granted our achievements in terms of legal equality, even while we recognize a gap that still exists between jurisprudence and reality. And the point that he makes, and he's made to me several times personally so that I can actually get the point and the penny can drop, is that while it is important to point out continued homophobia in society, we should never underestimate the importance of the state recognizing the inherent dignity of queer people. To be able to have sex with my boyfriend and knowing that I'm not breaking the law and that in the eyes of the state I'm deemed equal to a straight person is a very important constitutional achievement. Now, I want you to go back to what Kevel had said in that clip in the visuals. However, homosexuality was the fight for equality was real. which is why some people couldn't be visible. How hard was it to organize Pride in the context in which it wasn't obvious that queer people were entitled to dignity and equality?
It was such a powerful, amazing time to be alive, quite honestly. Post-apartheid South Africa, where I was fortunate enough to meet Zakie Ahmed, Edwin Cameron, Kevin Puerta, and all the fantastic leaders who wrote a shocking list of rights that we needed to achieve prior to gay marriage. You know, I don't know how much has changed from a society point of view. Mm. Black lesbians are targeted for rape in the townships today, just as they were then. I'm not sure how real the rights are from a democratic point of view. If we had to all stand up and suddenly vote for whether or not lesbian and gay people should keep their rights, I'm not entirely sure that South Africa and Africa would say, yay, let's do it.
Absolutely.
Which is why AfroPunk is so critical for me. They're a marketing arm of the Constitution, right? Mm. About no homophobia, no xenophobia, and they attract the most incredible, young, creative black people from across the continent, which for me are the leaders of our future.
Absolutely.
I think it's amazing. The legislation is critical. Teaching people about their rights is critical. But if you don't have access to people that can help you fight for your rights,
that's right,
and realize them, I'm not entirely sure how beneficial they are to the average person.
I want to bring Jabu in on exactly that point. Please don't wait for me to ask you questions. The issues are too many, and hours not going to be enough. All three of you know that we need a whole day to workshop this thing. So I'll ask you a prompt question, but we can go in any direction, and please interject gently as the four of us are in conversation. Pride had to be and must continue to be, and I have to admit, I myself have wrestled with this over the years, and I've come back now to my senses. It had to be inherently political, therefore.
Absolutely. That clip just takes me back to my age, 23. I'm 48 now. Coming out at the age of 23, sitting on the National Coalition for Gay and Lesbian Equality from my little tiny hometown of PE, and just admiring and working with the leadership of Simon and Corey, Bev Ditsy, Pumi Mtetwa, who really, really asserted the space that Pride, in fact, is a march. It's it's an act of protest. It's an action about the need for visibility and what are the consequences of visibility. And I think it should always remain that. I think we have to remember what our intersectional struggles are. And in fact, we, in many respects, need to question just as much as South Africa has shifted in a within our democracy. We've gained so many amazing rights around same-sex relationships, the ability to change one's gender marker, etc. Right, and so there are many legal gains that we've made, but what are the in fact intersectional realities that we're confronting? And I think that's the main issue. And I think what we're really challenged by now in this contemporary time is how the current Joburg Pride, for example, usurps itself within a gay consumerist culture, and what is the danger of making Pride a consumer culture narrative versus the struggle for safety, for dignity, for the right to have employment, to be safe, to be to not face discrimination, and I think we're sitting within that, and we're also sitting in this very immense challenge in this time about the very presence of fighting against sodomy laws and getting those rights, but now we're sitting in this nexus of what homonormativity looks like. And homonormativity right now looks like a very consumerist culture that is the dominant narrative. And so how do we really deal with that? And what do I mean by homonormativity is about who gets marginalized out of Pride. And those who get marginalized out of Pride are the very people who started Pride. Black poor lesbians, black poor gay men, trans women, trans men, drag queens,
How are they marginalized?
Well, I think there are a number of issues. And I think the way, for example, Joburg Pride was hijacked to become this consumerist entity. It was taken away from activists who wanted a pride that was not registered. It didn't have to be an entity. It could be owned by anybody who identified as such, as who identified with the values of that pride. and to have registered it to make it packageable for a capitalist industry, to make it all about glitter. And I think...
So who did the hijacking?
Well, I think what we could look at there is, for example, when we look at white dominance, if we talk, for example, about same-sex equality in South Africa, we don't have that. We have it in law, but not in practice. So when we see the display of public affection by same-sex people, who do we see? We see the visual bodies of white affection in this country that can march in Sandton and that can enjoy the privilege of that particular space. And then we look at who cannot enter those spaces.
I want to bring you in a second, Kevil. I just want to press Jabu to be a bit more blunt, because there's a version of this conversation we can have as queer people, but my audience is broader than that, and there are some queer listeners who do not understand the history, right?
And
that's exactly the problem. Maybe Sharon, you can tag here with Jabu. I'll give him a break. I want to ask this: is what Jabu implying that some of the interesting fault lines in broader society are reproduced within the queer community, and that, for example, white capital or white liberal women are able to render black people and poor people invisible and just have a big patsy at Melrose Arch? Is that the contention?
This current pride has been deracialized. That's the main thing. It's been depoliticized.
Can I intervene here quickly in a language that consumers will understand? And also the debate that we had with Afropunk last week. You know, Steve Biko was very clear on the fact that seeing ourselves in relation to white people is something we should avoid. And when Afropunk recently said we need to protest this white pride, my question to them was, why are you validating a pride that takes place in a commercial context when 2-3 weeks ago there was a beautiful pride that took place in Soweto? Why is that not our pride? And that was led by lesbians, and that's not commercial. So who's to say the pride that is this commercial baby that happens in the north is that we should be focused on? Why is that the pride? And then the second point I want to make is, we used to spend hours, like when I say hours, I mean 6 hours it took us to debate the fact that it was going to be called lesbian and gay pride as opposed to gay pride. Mm. And eventually we got it right. But I mean, the focus for me at the time was around hearing everybody's voices and understanding what everybody wanted out of pride.
Mm.
So you had Yusuf Abdullah, who was the party queen, who wanted to play with, the Electric Workshop kind of raves, right? Mm. And there was room for them to play. But then we had Norman, who was from Kwatema, you know, who was unemployed, whose voice was equally important. And because my fortunate base was the coalition in Yeovil, we moved meetings into Yeovil as opposed to in the north, and we made sure that Norman had money to get to meetings, and we had food, and everybody felt equal so they could contribute. And I don't think people are conscientized to that level of creating a balanced playground so everybody can have a role to play.
Let's bring Kevil in here. I hear what you're saying. That's a very interesting dialectic with Jabu. Kevil?
You know, I want to take it back to the history, and it's hard to not be emotional when you're listening to that clip. And if I think, taking it back to my age, I was born in 1982, and in 1990, I was a young boy in a town called Azadville, and I think it's important for us to remember the small towns that we all come from.
Mm.
And at that time, I would not have even understood the impact of that march on my life and my future in this country as a brown person. And if we think about the pride in that context, and Simon's words are so powerful, where he said, my blackness and my gayness cannot be separated. And what does that mean in the current context of pride? It means that if we are having a march, be it a celebration and a commemoration, it has to include the intersectionality of xenophobia. It has to include a strong stance as queer people where we say that gender-based violence in South Africa is not acceptable. And if we think about pride in that context, that is what is going to change the lives of generations to come. And so I want to acknowledge as a person at that time and what that pride meant for me, even though I didn't necessarily even know it at that stage.
So can I ask this question? Obviously, there's a broad strategic agreement between the three of you, but I just want to make sure I'm not misunderstanding. Is there a disagreement about tactics here, Jabu, that if we were to have a positive injection of media focus, money for organization, not to make money, for the People's Pride, Soweto Pride, Township Pride, that's far more important than using our creativity and intellect to critique what happens at Melrose Arch. Or do you disagree with Sharon?
Look, I think we have a vastly complex history. We all agree on that. To go back to the central part of our discussion being the histories of pride, I would say there's been an erasure, within our archives, right, around trans existence, for example. So we've had a lesbian gay pride, but not necessarily an insertion around trans existence. And lesbian and gay communities have been complicit in that erasure. So it's not just about capitalism. It's also about looking at who has been excluded and who doesn't fit the norm. So sex workers who are the most visible around trans women identities in society, that have been part of riots and protests, that have faced imprisonment, that understand the complexities of systemic violence, right, are deeply complex, that are part of the formulations of pride. Black lesbians, for example, that we've spoken about. And I think if we look at history and not to repeat it, and, James Baldwin speaks about how we need to almost dismantle the whole vocabulary around the archive. Absolutely. And the power that the archive holds and who is not in the archive. So as we celebrate Stonewall, of 50 years of Stonewall, it has only been in the last 5 years that Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera have been acknowledged as the foreground trans women that have led that riot. And it has always been called a gay riot, when in fact trans women led that riot. And I think that there's something to be said, and I love what Sylvia Rivera says. It's like, when I saw the first Molotov being thrown, you know, what we would call a petrol bomb, I knew that the revolution is on, right? And that is how pride started. It started with the embodiment that we cannot sit and celebrate when there is in fact nothing to celebrate.
Absolutely.
And I think those are the issues. And so when we look at Santon, it's not to say it should exist or it shouldn't exist. It's to say, can we accept that there are 50 donors that will put money into a party and not do the same to rectify economic injustice in this country?
Sharon, we're going to lose you in 2 minutes. I'm going to give you 2 uninterrupted minutes. What are your further reflections?
My further reflections are that pride in Santon should have led with the fact that lesbians are raped. I think it's unfortunate that there's no politicization. I think one of the things that's missing fundamentally that I was lucky enough to be exposed to is something like the National Coalition for Gay and Lesbian Equality. I don't think there's a central human rights-based strategic organization that understands the intersectionality of human rights that can drive the political messaging of a pride, but then also provide space not for us to hate, but to step over the line. You know, I was a very privileged, entitled white woman who was lucky enough to live in the Oval amongst incredible humans that taught me things I would never know, you know? And I think we're missing that. So, and I think it's wrong that we have a party when lesbians are dying, particularly when 1 in 2 women are raped. And in that, I include woman-born woman and woman-identified woman. My last comment is, when we did do gay pride in 99, lesbian and gay pride in 99 and 2000, we marched across Nelson Mandela Bridge and we had it at the Electric Workshop, right? And it was really a bunch of different, diverse, collective people, drag artists, drag queens. There were subtleties in our communities that are people don't even see at the moment. There's just an amazing collective that people are not putting time into finding. There is no community per se. So I think probably if the three of us sat down and had a conversation and did an audit of what organizations exist and brought everyone together, you might have something to move forward, you know?
Sharon, thanks for what you have done and also for being part of this conversation and your reflections.
Thank you very much for including me.
It is only a pleasure. Sharon Cooper, who is currently manager of Afropunk, in charge of sponsorship and business development in Africa. I want you to be part of this conversation. It is a safe space. Ask whatever questions you want. We've got queer persons Sometimes we don't want to do the heavy lifting because we don't have to, and you can also make Google your friend. I'm in a good mood. There's no such thing as a stupid question. Call in. Maybe you're a young queer person and you have curiosities about visibility, the challenges. What are you going through? What does pride mean to you? I'm also interested whether there's a generational element here. As a young queer person, for example, or not young, do you care for a political pride, or do you enjoy having a massive patsy at Melrose Arch and Jabu and Eusebius and Kevil and Sharon can go have a prayer meeting somewhere else? What do you think? Because also we can't make the assumption that just because some of us have institutional memory and can speak intersectionally, that we speak on behalf of every single queer person. So we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you're an ally with questions. Or maybe you have experienced pride, including the historical ones. Do you miss pride as it used to be? Is there no difference? How do you see it? 011-883-0702.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
Eusebius MacKaiser.
On 702.
24 minutes before noon. If you've just tuned in, you're in the middle of a conversation about the history of pride locally and globally and some of the important political and other aspects of this very important event and movement. Let's take your calls. Javas, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm extremely well. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I know. We're talking, me and my friends, that you're no longer enjoying pride because of the age group. Like, you are 30, 35 and upwards, and you feel like when you go to pride, there are a lot of young lesbians that are just there for drinking and jolling. Like, you wanted something that you can benefit. Maybe something that they can talk about development, how can we develop ourselves economically. Things like that, how we can live our lives, how can we improve our lives, educational backgrounds and everything. But most of the time when you go there, it's like you see that you wasted your time and your mind to come there. People are just drinking. People are just jolly, proposing each other. Like, there's no value anymore. So we don't know if maybe they can try to improve or have another party for young, for people who are 30 upwards, you know?
Okay.
I cannot say 35. Maybe people from 30 upwards, people now who are married, you know?
You know, Javas, that's a whole conversation on its own. I've often wondered what happened to queer people, especially after 40, I would say. I think 30, 35 knows. I don't know. I think you're being unduly skeptical. Maybe we end up in the same place as the missing socks, wherever that might be.
Now, like, we are serious, you know. We're no longer going there just to get a girlfriend. We already have our own wives. You know?
I want to come back to that. Ageism is important. Carla, good morning to you.
Good morning, Eusebius. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Carla, and I used to be one of the participants in the old Joburg People's Pride movement. Back in the day when the original Johannesburg Pride had a protest there where it was disrupted.
Yes.
Basically, the movement split into two. One went into Johannesburg People's Pride, the other went into now the current Johannesburg Pride, which I can definitely agree with Jabu that it has been hijacked by a neoliberal and white supremacist capitalist agenda. Because, I mean, if you look at Pride today, we are trying to copy what people are doing overseas in America. You stick a rainbow on everything, and then you call that pride, you know, and you have companies who pretend like they actually care about us queer folk, including black and brown and trans folk. They pretend you care about us the rest of the year, and then for 1 month during Pride, they stick a rainbow on. I'm not going to mention these companies. They stick a rainbow on their products, and then apparently they care about us. But the rest of the year is employment discrimination. Me, for instance, I've been on a recruitment website. I get told by the recruitment website that I cannot register my profile because my gender doesn't match the gender that I was given at birth as a transgender woman, right? And then I get told that the Department of Home Affairs has, that's what they say. You cannot be recognized as a human being because you as a person right now are not matching the gender you were assigned or given at birth by a doctor that did no scientific test. But coming back to the history and legacy of Pride, it is so important to go back to where we come from. We need to know where we come from. And the younger generation of today, it's as if their history has been erased. They have no memory. They do not know about the importance of what Pride actually is. They think it's a drinking fest, it's a party. And, I mean, if you look at the way Pride around today, it's not accessible to the poor. It's expensive. It discriminates against people from different races. If you look at the actual diversity and representation, we're living in a country where over 90% of the population is not white. Pride where the majority of the population is white.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there, Carla. I want to give other voices a chance too, but that's a really interesting critique, and that's why Carla is also a member, one of the collective members of Joburg People's Pride, precisely to speak into the importance of memory. Before we take other callers, let's just shoot the breeze on a couple of things here. Is there ageism within the queer community? I think that's probably true, whether there's pride or not, right? I mean, you'll be hard-pressed to go to Liquid Blue and find people over the age of 40 there. I mean, that's an interesting topic in and of itself. But what are your thoughts as you were listening to Java?
Oh, I'm definitely with Java. So I'm like 48, and I'm like, I can't even move the way I did when I was in my 20s. but I do think there's a need for a diversity of spaces and diversity of interests, and I hope Java will take up an initiative to create something for the over 30s. But I think it is important that we see a wider range of issues. I think the issue around, I am concerned about the stigma around alcohol. I do think that many people do use alcohol as a numbing, you know, or as a way to start flirting with somebody. We all have a drink or whatever. But I do think that sometimes it can be excessive in some regards, but I think that's also based on trauma. So not necessarily a blaming factor, but, you know, there is an issue around confidence and self-esteem and
that's a very
all
good
of those
point.
Kinds
Absolutely.
Of issues. You know?
Can we speak into Carla's excellent set of comments, Carol, and maybe take up one of the provocative questions I posed before the break? Is it important for young queer people and allies to care about memory, and if so, why?
Well, I think the simple answer to that is there cannot be queer pride without queer history, right? We need to know where we come from in order to be able to say this is what we're celebrating and this is what we're remembering. And in that regard, I think just taking it back to the history of pride and this question of celebration or, you know, the party element, which I think is a very valid criticism of it, but also to understand, I think pride, particularly in terms of the visibility, in terms of people being able to kind of celebrate their existence of coming out on the streets and saying, this is who I am in various formations. We know that drag queens are a critical part of the history of pride, and that element is celebration, right? And I don't think that necessarily should be lost, but what we need to understand perhaps is that that celebration in itself was very political, and perhaps that's what's been lost, is that being out on the streets, you know, showing yourself, showing your body in whatever form that you felt comfortable with, was and is a political act.
But can you articulate for the public why keeping it political isn't only important out of for the sake of nostalgia or political continuity as an end in itself? Is there another reason why it's important?
Well, if we look at the African context where we're still having to fight against a narrative of homosexuality being un-African. So how do we speak against that narrative? We say we're here. We're actually here on the streets. We live amongst you. And that's why that visibility is important. And also that visibility comes at a huge cost for a lot of people in lots of communities where, you know, there's still prejudice, there's still discrimination. And at the very worst, which we know exists, there's death and rape, you know. And so I think thinking about the visibility of what is needed in that context is important.
Tabiso, good morning to you.
Good morning, Kivis. How are you?
I'm extremely well. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to just put in my two cents. I'm calling from the East End. In regards to Pride, I was just saying, I don't understand the context of it being in Phantom. So according to me, I believe like gays, lesbians, and transgenders living in a township have much more pressing issues. For example, I have a friend that is a transgender living in my neighborhood. She can't access, for example, pearls, and she can't, because I can't even access PrEP in the township. So in my head, I would rather the much of debate in the townships, where issues are much more pressing, and where the issues are we have different challenges within the townships. That me going to Sandton, for example, it's not going to make sense to someone living in the township. So I would rather pride be more channeled and funding be more channeled in the township, mm-hmm. where visibility, where Black people can understand the issues we are going through. Because driving to Sandton and walking on the Grayson Drive somewhere in Sandton, no one in the township sure. or in township won't understand Utabiso is experiencing issues like this. So I would rather it be diversified and maybe move around different townships where we can ventilate our issues much better.
Okay, makes sense. So Dashan, good morning.
Morning, Eusebius. Thanks for a wonderful show. I think Kevo just alluded to it now, which is that a political pride and a party pride are not mutually exclusive. One can be political and still have a party around it, as we did in the 90s. You know, my first pride was in 1996, and I marched for 10 years, and our marches in the early years were political. They needed to be, and they still need to be. And, you know, I think what we also need to focus on is the presence of sitting, of being in a pride march and being surrounded by people like you, and for the first time in your life, not feeling like a minority. Mm. That's an incredible feeling that a pride march engenders. We shouldn't lose sight of that.
I love what you're saying, Sudeshan. We're going to come back to that. A last call for today because we're going to run out of time. Roman, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Roman. Go ahead.
I'm good. I just wanted to say how I believe currently pride has become over-sexualized and we've lost the true meaning of what pride is, with love and acceptance. Because with all the pride we've been through lately, you just see how it's become like, look how sexy I can look with the least amount of clothing I wear. And it kind of is detrimental to all the brothers and sisters around the world who live in conservative countries, because I come from Russia where there are no gay rights. And the politicians love to use the Western pride as examples of why gays shouldn't have rights. Like, oh, look how over-sexualized they are. Look how, like, they're wearing dildos on their foreheads. They're walking around half naked. We don't want our children around that. So it's the fact that pride has changed so much from love and acceptance to more about sex, I think, is costing our gay brothers and sisters and everything around the world.
Okay, I hear you. You're going to take a break. I agree and I understand all of your calls, but there's something that bothers me, and I just want to think aloud, and Kevel and Jabu can join me in critiquing my thought bubble. Presumably, it would be a win for heteropatriarchy if we were to start strategizing what is the best way to look to make sure that a homophobic Russian leader is more amenable to my sexual identity. I'm not sure that's the answer. Equally, if I do want to have a big party, as Sudeshna says, and I particularly like that comment, why does it have to be a zero-sum game? Isn't part of the political project to get to a state where I can be as incredibly banal in exhibiting all facets of myself? My funny side, my wry side, my drunk side, my flirtatious side, my apolitical side at times when I need to not talk politics and also to be political. So, pardon the pun, but there's a kind of straight jacketing that I think we should guard against. And I'm not sure whether I'm right or wrong that. I'll ask my two guests to respond to that as well.
Eusebius Makaiza on 702 for the curious.
Jabu, how do we achieve diversity and consciousness? Can we have our cake and eat it?
Ooh, I don't know if diversity is a swear word anymore.
But within the queer community, if someone is, I won't mention my friend. I've got a butch, UCT trained, finance sector working queer friend who's messaged me just now. He can laugh privately in his home. Who doesn't necessarily want to sit in a two-hour seminar with me and Kevel.
Mm-hmm.
So I want him to be able to go to Pride on Saturday without feeling guilty. And at the same time, I think that the political project matters in ways in which I've had to be re-educated about in terms of it's important for myself as Eusebius. How do we straddle those different aspects of the queer community, not wanting it to be homogenous, but also you said to me off air just now that consciousness does matter.
Yeah, I think consciousness does matter. If we're able to claim the word pride back as an action of visibility about marginalization, then we are able to take strides in terms of understanding what pride means. Mm-hmm. Other than, and it can, of course, be an exposure of parties and desire and bodies. And I think those are very struggles of ourselves, you know.
Yes.
You know, having a trans body and having to find an assertion of what it means to be desirable or to be desired or to find a positiveness. And I think the issue around diversity is what embeds that diversity is that you can be rich, poor, white, colored, black, whatever your spectrum is, trans, gay, heterosexual. But what is the centrality that connects us to what we want at the finish line? And I think at the finish line is the issues that we all desire, which is safety, which is an ability to find the best in ourselves, you know, and to thrive for that in each other, right? And I think the problem is if we can shift what I see as pride being in, and particularly in this Joburg spectrum, that pride being an assertion of a mainstream that is largely creating a homonormativity around consumer culture. And I think we have to question that. And I think we can all consume things if we give it back to where we want it to be placed in relation to advancing and building. But I think if it's not doing that.
Okay.
My other
question. Can I ask a devil's advocate question to both you and Kevin? Kevin, come in there though. I still want to push the entitlement of the queer community to have as much pluralism as straight people. Mm-hmm. Must I feel bad if I am a gay banker because I can go to Barcelona for 2 weeks and have a ginormous party because the subtext of what Jabu is saying is that apparently I can only be truly committed to intersectionality if I'm also anti-capitalist?
Can I respond quickly to one point of that? The majority of Irantis donors are white, gay, wealthy men that give money to social justice work and that make Irantis work and makes the possibility for Iranti to have a team of 8 people to work across the region, etc.
Before they go to Spain and Barcelona.
Absolutely. Okay. And they can do their privileges, but they apportion an ability to understand the social consciousness of what is required.
And drawing on that, I think what brings us all close to each other, which is quite remarkable, and the opportunity, the potential for that, is that as queer people, we all know and we all have the same stories around what it's like to come out, what it's like to be the other, whether you're the banker in a fancy bank or whether you're in a community, in a township. We all have that draws us together, and that's the link of commonality. And I think the potential of pride is that it brings that together to say that we're all actually in the same boat when it comes to the bones of it, you know, the bare bones of it. And we all face that. And perhaps that's what's kind of lost.
You know? A last small, big issue, but we don't have much time for it. Roman makes an interesting point, and I want to reduce it to aesthetics. One can debate whether tactically the way we dress, being in all our, you know, fabulous glory and inglory at Pride, helps or doesn't help fighting homophobia in society. I'm uncomfortable, but I'm not an activist. So I don't know what works and doesn't work instrumentally. But as a matter of principle, I've always thought, Kevil, that part of the problem with the homophobic gaze is that the homophobic gaze includes assumptions about how sexual I'm allowed to be or not to be. And that gaze is not a gaze that you will find being turned on the straight mate of the homophobe in the pub, who's also hypersexual the whole entire night. So why must I start thinking in really complicated terms about whether a particular skimpy dress is going to render me over-sexualized and therefore political conservatism is going to get upset?
And once again, it's the burden of queerness, you know, that we're obviously always having to justify our existence in the space and how we look and how we perform, and that's something you carry with you.
Pretend,
you
know? We only knit.
Yeah, and that's why I caution against the respectability politics. And we know in our history, so in 2004 in Pride, for example, there was this shadowy group of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance who were saying, we don't want drag queens to be representing us because that makes us look bad. And there were people who stood up against it and said, absolutely not. They are a critical part of our community, and that visibility. Absolutely. is important. And Absolutely. So I want us to caution against, you know, just focusing on the narrative of hypersexuality. That's not it. It's about really being able to be true and visible to ourselves. And that also means perhaps then also acknowledging our bodies in all different shapes, colors, and sizes and being okay with that. So I think it's more around the message of being affirming around people's identity, whatever that means.
I think this has been mostly, and importantly so, a very good conversation about the fault lines within our community. In a minute, what would you say broadly, and it's maybe a part two conversation, Jabu, on another occasion, to straight allies that are listening, where do they fit into our project for continued recognition and to be seen?
I think they're amazing when they speak up and they're not silent, when they're affirmative as parents, when they're supportive and visible alongside us, and not contributing to homophobic, transphobic, intersexphobic comments. I think allies are people we identify as allies. And so I think for me, they play a crucial role in how they kind of educate the mainstream.
Okay. I thought you were going to say allies are people too.
That too.
Obviously, there's only one last question left. So after all that, are you two going to Pride this weekend?
I am going to the Trans Health Conference that is hosted by Gender Dynamics. But if I did not have an event on this weekend, I would not be going.
Kevil?
It is Diwali this weekend. And so how do I represent Pride? It means being in my community. It means being in my temple where I am visible to a community so that I can say to the people, that younger person out there who is afraid to come out, that it's actually okay. And that's how I celebrate Pride.
Oh, I could listen to the both of you the whole day. You've been absolutely brilliant. There are so many other issues to pick up on that intersect with broader social and political issues that aren't just restricted to queer rights interests. Thank you so much for your excellence and for coming into studio.
Thank you. Thank you so much.